Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Well, it looks like franchising is seeing light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not a freight train heading our way. At least that's what's being reported in the news of late. Most recently, the Wall Street Journal reported that franchising is showing signs of growth. A recent article in the journal, Franchise Industry Shows Glimmer of Recovery, states the U.S. franchising industry is poised for modest growth in 2011, according to two new studies to be released this week. Franchise businesses in most sectors are expected to add more store units and employees this year, concludes an analysis produced by consulting firm PricewaterhouseCoopers on behalf of the International Franchise Association. PwC attributes the positive outlook in large part to the recently enacted tax and unemployment benefits package, which includes payroll and income cuts. You know, income tax cuts. Boy, I'll tell you, income cuts. Imagine that. You know, the study projects that the number of franchise units are going to grow 2.5% in 2011 to 784,000 plus. And franchises are also expected to create 194,000 new jobs in 2011, which is a 2.5% increase. Those are all good signs. You know, AllBusiness.com also had a recent article from a similar perspective. For this article, Signs of Life, Franchise Industry Heads into 2011 with Cautious Optimism. They report in 2008, recession began. In 2009, the franchise industry started to feel the impact as credit dried up and money was short. And franchises started closing up shop, and even some franchisors started throwing in the towel. They go on to report, at first glance, it might seem that 2010 was nothing but more of the same doom and gloom. Money and qualified investors has still been hard to come by, and when exactly that will ease up is hard to predict, leaving franchisors in uncharted territory leading into 2011 and beyond. But some are hoping for help from the controversial Small Business Jobs and Credit Act of 2010, but smart franchisors are taking matters into their own hands, improving support for franchisees, building innovative lending programs, upgrading facilities when times are slow, and even engaging what they call co-opetition to share costs and benefits. You can read both of those articles online at WSJ.com and AllBusiness.com. respectively. You know, in similar news, the IFA announced yesterday their 2011 Franchise Business Economic Outlook webinar. The event is scheduled for Tuesday, January 18th at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. The purpose of the webinar is to present 2011 Franchise Business Economic Outlook prepared for the IFA Educational Foundation by PwC, which we just mentioned in the Wall Street Journal article. Now, speakers at the webinar will be IFA Chairman and CEO of Driven Brands, Ken Walker, as well as IFA President and CEO, Stephen Caldera, and Drew Lyon, a principal at PricewaterhouseCoopers. I'm also very excited to report that IFA President and CEO, Steve Caldera, is scheduled to be my guest right here on Franchise Today next Thursday, January 20th. Of course, we'll be discussing the economic outlook for franchising, along with IFA efforts on Capitol Hill, the upcoming IFA convention in Las Vegas, and about Steve's first 9 months at the IFA. It should be a very exciting show indeed. And speaking of the IFA convention, is anyone getting as excited as I am? The event is a month away, and personally, I can't wait. I'll be facilitating two roundtable discussions at the event. The first will be about mobile marketing and technology during the Technology Summit on Monday, February 14th. And the second will be about social media and franchise lead generation on Wednesday, February 16th. In between, I'll be floating around, attending as many educational sessions as I can. And you'll also be able to find me in the exhibitor hall, either wandering around or parked in the Elements local booth with Jeremy LeDuc, and as you may recall, Jeremy was a recent guest on Franchise Today. Of course, I'll be sure to attend the Taste of Franchising and all the wonderful aspects of the convention. Deb Evans, my guest a few weeks ago on Franchise Today, and of course CEO at Computer Explorers, is planning a tweet up, which like last year will be a great opportunity to meet people you've met on Twitter. Well, there's just so much to do at the convention. So if you have yet to register for the event, please do so today by going to the Franchise Essentials site at fmdpro.com and click on the IFA 2011 logo, and it's going to take you directly to the IFA convention registration page. And it's definitely an event you really don't want to miss. So if you're on Twitter, please use the hashtag IFA2011 for all info and messages about the IFA convention. It's a great way to stay focused on the event and to share with other attendees, even during the event. So hopefully I'll see you in Sin City. And before introducing today's guest, I'd like to thank Dave Melton, the successful author and Domino's multi-unit franchisee who was my guest last week. Dave shed some valuable insights into hiring and building a workforce as we discussed his great book, Hiring the American Dream. If you haven't listened to last week's segment of Franchise Today, I highly recommend you do so by accessing it on demand at www.blogtalkradio.com/Franchise Today Show. Actually, you'll find all past segments of Franchise Today on the site as well, including today's segment. I'd also like to thank Joe Caruso, co-producer of Franchise Today. You know, many just don't understand how much work goes into scheduling and preparing for each week's show. Beyond finding some of the brightest minds in franchising, you know, Joe pours through franchise social media sites, talks with franchise executives and attorneys at four or five different association groups in Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, and South Jersey. He spends an unbelievable amount of time following up with new and current contacts, and all done to determine what's important to franchising and the professionals within franchising so we can bring you, our listening audience, compelling, informative topics week in and week out. Then Joe finds the brightest minds in franchising to discuss the topics from a first-hand expert perspective. It is truly what makes Franchise Today the leader in franchise media. Certainly the most relevant show in franchising today. Joe, speaking for myself and for the franchise community, thank you for your hard work and efforts. You're appreciated beyond your wildest thoughts. And as we're certainly entrenched in the NFL playoffs, there's a great deal of hype and excitement. We're seeing football, professional sports at its finest as we move towards the ultimate sports event, the Super Bowl. Complete with all the pomp and circumstance, glitter and spotlight, it's hard to fathom or even comprehend that the players are really everyday people. And once the lights are turned off and their professional sports careers end, usually within just a few short years, not many fans even think about what life would be like for these players in the future. Actually, there are probably many players that fall into that category as well. And that's why I'm excited to have as my guest today Michael Stone. Michael is a former NFL player turned entrepreneur and business promoter. During his 7 years in the NFL, he played for the New England Patriots, Arizona Cardinals, New York Giants. Currently, he's the founder of Allied Athlete Group and co-founder, chief executive officer at Coliseum Enterprises. He has founded the Professional Athlete Franchise Initiative that is the bridge that connects the professional athlete community to the franchise industry through education, research, and interaction. Michael, welcome to Franchise Today.
Thanks for having me, Paul. Happy to be on board.
Well, thanks for being here. I know you're busy and always on the go, although right now I know calling in from Atlanta, you're pretty much snowed and ice in, right?
Yes, pretty strange almost. we have been, it's been about 4 days into this freeze out we're having here in Atlanta.
Wow, that is something, like I said before the show, I heard that it's actually colder with more snow in Atlanta than there is in Canada right now. So that should be interesting. It's a good thing that the Falcons, right?
Exactly.
Anyway, you know, leading into this, really interesting looking over the information about your Professional Athlete Franchise Initiative, and I know we've seen a lot of things in the news throughout the year. It's not just of late, throughout the year about professional athletes. running into some type of financial problem shortly after their career. So I'd really admire the fact that you're put together something that can help guide some of these players as they come out of their pro careers, get on the right track, remain on that right track, and hopefully build a future outside of sports. You know, what was your inspiration for it? I mean, you're not out of the NFL all that long. I think it's about 4 years, right?
Yeah, actually two.
2 years?
Yes, actually 2 years. And there's something. It was something that I realized, you know, probably my last 2 years in the NFL, is that there weren't a lot of resources for helping guys make this transition. So, you know, for the past, 4 years, we've been really working hard on trying to put some resources together. And PAFI, I'm really excited about because I think that it is one of the resources that really connects with the athlete's experience if they understand what those connection points are.
That's a good point. Now, when you started it, what was the reason you chose franchising?
Okay, I would say it was a guy named Junior Bridgman.
Okay.
As I looked at different opportunities that athletes can get into, I started to realize that a lot of athletes, were entrepreneurial-minded people. They all, in many cases, get into business for themselves when they're done playing, and that's for a multitude of reasons. One is that you aren't in the corporate world, and there's a certain corporate culture that you have to develop fast after sports in order to get back into the corporate world. A lot of people choose entrepreneurism because they have a little bit of money and they have some dreams and some aspirations that they want to develop using that money. And what I realized when I met Junior Bridgman is that, as athletes, when you connect to businesses that already have the game plan set up, it allows you to kind of operate as you did as an athlete. You have to come in and execute. And it seemed like a perfect marriage because the franchise industry is for executors to me. I think good franchisees are good executors. And I guess going back to Junior Bridgman, he was one of the first guys I met in the franchise industry as I started my research into the industry. And he, former NBA basketball player, played for Milwaukee Bucks for a good amount of time. And he is currently a master franchisee for the Wendy's brand and for Chili's, and a very successful one at that. And I kind of watched his history and talked to him a little bit and realized that, wow, if guys, really follow what's laid out for them, they can really, we can create a lot of Junior Bridgmans, and it's our goal to do that.
Absolutely. I remember Junior Bridgman growing up watching the NBA, quite a player, and I just read the article not too long ago that was in Franchise Times about Junior Bridgman, and I was really quite intrigued, and it seems like he's built himself quite a nice enterprise, and it's real nice to see that he's got his family involved because that obviously is a very important part on the road to success. And I think you're right when you say about, executing, because as you know in sports, as our listeners know in sports, it is about executing the game plan, following the game plan all the way through. How important is it for these athletes as they leave the sports world and they enter the business world and franchising that they have a coach to rely on?
I think it's very important. I think that even before they leave the game, they need to start developing their coaches. And I think that, that's one thing I really pushed hard on doing is meeting people that can help me make my transition or help me in my next life or my next career. So I think it's very important. I think that in most cases to where you see the horror stories is because people didn't have coaches or didn't have the right coaches with the experience, in certain industries.
A lot of people, of course, we hear all the time of, escalating salaries, and we hear these multi-million dollar, contracts, and a lot don't realize that there are a lot of professional athletes that are not making the multi-million dollar contracts. And with a short career in the NFL, I think I heard, 3 or 4 years of a lifespan. By the time you take away expenses and enjoying a little bit of you know, the professional world, there's not really a lot to retire on after just 4 years. Am I correct in saying that?
You're very correct. I think that, you know, the image is the multi-million-dollar athlete, but I think, you know, you look at the average 2.5 years, actually, for the NFL, 5 years for NBA. You know, you have a young college graduate making, you know, a couple $100,000, you know, $200,000 to $300,000 in most cases, in probably 80% of the cases. The other 20% are a million and above, but in most cases, there's guys making a good bit of money to start their future careers. I think the problem happens when guys don't realize that how short the career is and the fact that you go through a catastrophic, you know, job loss or loss of income. And at the same time, you mix that catastrophic loss of income with the fact that the profession you've been crafting yourself to do your whole life, you can no longer do for money after 2.5 years. And that's a really interesting point that I touched on, because if you told me before I was going to med school as a doctor that I could only practice medicine for 2.5 years and then my skills would all be useless and outdated, and that is what the reality is of my profession as a doctor, you know, I would rethink med school. So I think that when you really put it into a real perspective, you know, sports is a career that you're going to do for a few years, and you'll never be able to make money doing what you practice doing your whole life. So you have to come into it thinking about what are my next steps.
How hard is it for an athlete to acclimate to the fact that they're no longer of this star status? And I know not all professional athletes are deemed to be superstars, but certainly they've excelled at all levels in their career and have been looked up to, whether it be by friends, family, the neighborhood, the school, you know, the schoolmates. And then, of course, we leave, you know, the professional sports world, and there's got to be a void there. So what's the feeling like there?
I think it's a reality check. It's a huge reality check, you know, realizing that, you know, everybody, you know, you have a certain status and you have a certain following based on, you know, something that you, you know, did and excelled at. And when you lose your ability to do that, the following goes along with it. It's the kind of nature of the beast. I think it's hard for guys to really get a grasp of until it happens, until you're done playing your last football game and you're, you know, you're pretty much starting, you know, back at point one, level one of, hey, now what will I do with the rest of my life? So I think it's hard to grasp, and I think you can't virtually, you know, prepare for it. You almost have to go through it.
Yeah, I agree, and it's got to be difficult. And, you know, going back to, you know, coaches and even referees, and, you know, sports athletes have always been, you know, basically told what they're doing right, what they're doing wrong, whether it be a referee throwing a penalty flag or a coach getting on them. You know, when we talk about that, you know, what do athletes have to guard against? What are the red flags they have to look at as they leave their professional sports career behind and they start looking at their options ahead of them?
I think that an athlete has to really look out for getting involved in things that he is not expending his capital. I think an athlete's capital is his brand, his name, the network that he's built through his sports career, or the sports field in general. I think that when guys, you know, totally move away from that and get into things that they don't know much about or they can't leverage themselves through, I think guys have a hard time. I think the best transitions I've seen are people like the Junior Bridgman who use their profession, use the fact that they have a good following in certain markets, and use the fact that they have some, you know, certain political connections in certain markets to leverage opportunities. And I think that's where you have your biggest win, and that's where your biggest losses are when guys involved with things that are just totally separate and gain no value from their past, you know, experience.
Sure. You know, I know athletes have been very instrumental in the growth of franchising. And case in point, thinking back to Jerry Richardson, some people might not be aware, actually quit the Baltimore Colts over a $250 raise in 1961. I think it was along the lines of taking a salary from like $97.50 a year to $10,000. And then he parlayed that franchise into a fortune and ending up owning a professional team.
Wow.
And if people are not aware, he came out of the Hardee's brand with 221 franchise locations. And so there are opportunities that are out there.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
You know, and then also, of course, you know, and again, maybe I'm showing my age, but of course there's Gino Marchetti and his experience with Kentucky Fried Chicken. But, you know, of course, you know, they've done a lot for franchising, and I know a lot of athletes have been looking at franchising. How do athletes need – what do they need to do to ensure that they make profitable franchise investments from your perspective?
I think first and foremost they have to educate themselves about the industry. I think the first thing you do is, you know, come in with well-managed expectations. So you're not coming into it thinking that it's going to be a, you know, 100% return on investment, you know, in a year. You're coming in understanding that this is something you're going to have to work within or have a very strong team working within. And you're going to have to, you know, really go through the same ups and downs that, you know, any franchisee goes through. I think them understanding that is always a good start. I think that understanding what their strong points are and what they can leverage and what markets they should look at franchising in is another piece. And I think that end of the day, when you go into it, I think you find good when you're around good people. When you're around good people that you can partner with or that you can go into business with, I think that's a big key. When you're not necessarily looking at, you know, who's the closest around that I can work with, but who's the best. And I think that one thing we want to do is try to build that connection between, you know, professionals in the business and these athletes that want to get into this business and build some mentorships. You know, that's the key. Build your mentors.
Yeah, I agree, and of course we know, and especially, you know, I mean, if a professional football career is 2.5 years on average, certainly that still brings these athletes into the business world, into the real world, at a relatively young age. And what about bad advisors? You know, seems to me there, you know, there might be plenty of people that might try to take advantage of a professional football player's status and perception, maybe even that they have more money than they do.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the big dangers, too. You know, people, you know, will think you have, you know, you have expendable money or your money spends a little differently or more freely than others. So you end up in a lot of situations with bad advisors to where it's just you're just seen as a way to you know, bring in some extra profits. So I think that, you know, end of the day, that's going to be something that will always happen. You'll always, you know, have bad advisors around, floating around, and they seem to always be floating around the athlete/entertainment arena because, you know, for the simple fact that when I came into the NFL, I had no way, had no idea how to interview a financial advisor. I had no idea what to look for when talking to a financial advisor, and you're forced to make these decisions at 21 years old. But I think, you know, I think the one thing we want to try to do is, you know, be that resource so that you can educate yourself. So everything you're listening to is not purely the advice of the advisor, but things that you're actually, you know, breaking down and developing understanding for. I think that's where you find your most winning situations, where you understand as well.
So tell me a little bit about the Professional Athlete Franchise Initiative and how it came about.
Basically, the initiative, it started last year as we were talking to the IFA about creating an educational summit for professional athletes to learn about the industry. We created our summit actually last year, July 14th. It was at Emory University in Atlanta. We had about 20 to 25 athletes come down, classroom setting, very small, very intimate classroom setting. Had a group of brands come down and play a role in educating these athletes about the industry. Great event. You know, a lot of guys had a good time, learned a lot. The focus of the event was the learning, and it was not a sales event, which we're very excited about and proud to be our badge of. We're not a sales, we're not a brokerage. We are a education, you know, based initiative. But we had that initiative, and we had a lot of athletes who missed the initiative or who came and couldn't stay the whole time that wanted to know more, wanted to continue a dialogue about franchising. So immediately afterwards, we began the work of building a full resource, something that a guy can call any day of the week and begin exploring the franchise industry. So we began about, I would say, 4 or 5 months ago. Began developing, you know, our programs, what we felt like the resource would provide to the athletes and to the franchise community, because I think it's both ways. And I guess the core behind our business, Professional Athlete Franchise Initiative, is advocating in both directions. We're advocating the franchise, the value of the franchise industry to the professional athlete community. And on the other side of things, we're advocating the value of a well-educated and groomed athlete franchisee to the franchisor community. Because I think that, you know, when you really spend some time educating these guys and getting them prepared and managing expectations, you know, you've got a group of guys who are, one, retiring at a young age, 28 years old on average, have a little bit of expendable money, so financing isn't as big of an issue, even though it still is. You have a diverse group. You know, sports represents a very diverse background, so you can really open up some diversity outlets. And at the end of the day, you have a group that has a little bit of PR strength coming from their past careers. So I think that these athletes can be a great wave of next-level franchisees, and that's what we're advocating to the franchisor community. So our whole goal, and with our initiative, is to be the bridge or the platform to where these connections are made, to where these, to where education happens, to where interaction happens, and at the end of the day, over the next, you know, two to three years, we want to start developing ourselves as the entity that's creating a new wave of athlete franchisees.
You know, and I think it's important to remind our listening audience that, you know, we're not just talking about former NFL players. There, of course, is, you know, Major League Baseball, the National Basketball Association, even the National Hockey League. And, of course, you know, probably if we dug down into it, we could talk about soccer and other sports. But, of course, the majority in the four major sports. So, you know, we are not just talking about NFL. And I think that lends to a point when you start thinking about Major League Baseball, that a lot of those athletes didn't even go to college because some of them were drafted right out of high school, might have kicked around 3 or 4 years in the minors, got up to the big leagues for 3 or 4 years, and then out, and they don't have the sports career anymore and no education to boot.
Exactly. And I think, and one thing we are working on as we speak is our alliance partners. We're going to provide a resource to the MLB Players Associations and Alumni Associations, along with the NFL, NHL, and NBA. Our goal this year is to develop and finalize these partnerships so we become that resource for those guys in helping their athletes transition. Because at the end of the day, if an athlete doesn't transition well, it's very bad for the athlete, but it's also bad for the leagues. You know, when you have, you know, a group of, you know, athletes retiring at the age of 28 as a reflection of the brand, and these guys can't find jobs and these guys aren't doing, you know, the right things with the next steps.
Sure. Do you wish you had something like the initiative back a few years before you retired?
Oh, definitely. Actually, it's funny, as I create initiatives or as we create programs, one thing that we do is look at, you know, what I wish I had when I was playing, the things that I was thinking about getting into that I, you know, didn't necessarily have the right connection to get into. So, and franchising was one of them. I actually went through, I believe it was my fourth or fifth year playing, to where I spent the summer, you know, looking at a lot of different brands, trying to learn about the franchise industry. And, you know, of course, the next year caught up with me, and, you know, the seasons rolled, and I moved to New England, and, you know, things rolled on, and I didn't follow through with it. But, yes, definitely. Me and my wife talk about it all the time. It's something we wanted to get into very early on as a franchise industry.
Now, do you think the leagues, NFL, Major League Baseball, the NBA, and so forth, do you think they should do more to encourage athletes to do these type of things, or is it something that basically the players have to take upon themselves?
Yeah, I think the leagues do a good job of putting together a series of programs, and they're adding to it, you know, every year. I participated in the NFL's second career entrepreneurial programs at Wharton, at Stanford, and at Kellogg, all 3 years, and you know, I enjoyed all of them. I learned a lot in all of them. So they're doing their piece. One thing that we want to be able to do is complement what they do and be a, you know, add a resource, an extension of what they do, because it's hard for a league and an association that focuses on maximizing your career when you're playing and negotiating with the league and making sure that everything is going well with the league to give a very direct and distinct focus to something, you know, like this initiative. It's hard for them to focus on it. So what we want to do is we want to do the job of focusing on it and just connect to the leagues, and, you know, so that they can use us as a resource to send athletes through our curriculum.
So you looked at franchising. You know, what's some of the most interesting things you learned about franchising? You know, what was your most surprising discovery?
I would say my most surprising discovery is how detailed of an instruction manual that you actually have. You know, it's not often that, you know, as an entrepreneur, you know, somebody says, here, you can have my idea. I just want a piece of it as you make money with it. And as, you know, coming out of sports, you know, I was an entrepreneur of sorts. I owned a few stores, clothing stores. And I look back and I look at all of the work I had to do to learn, you know, HR, operations, creating different structures within the organization. I had to do it all. And as I looked at franchising, I was like, wow, this is impressive how much is actually there for you as a resource. And I think, you know, all that's really asked of you is to execute. So I'm meeting a lot of athletes in the franchise industry now. So that's another thing I'm shocked about, how many athletes are involved with the industry. And the story is the same with all of them. They enjoy the fact that they – is very similar to existence as an athlete. You have your playbook in front of you.
Are there any names that would be recognized by our listening audience of you know, superstar athletes that you've come across that are in franchising today?
A lot of the guys that I know, I wouldn't say are superstars. And I think, to be honest, I think the best franchisees may not be the superstars, but the best franchisees may be the guys that made a good bit of money, that are disciplined, that are in their franchise every day and are present and have worked their franchise. So some of those names are George Tinsley, very impressive, mm-hmm. Former NBA player, owns a lot of franchises in airports, Tampa and Miami. Another one is Tioka Jackson, actually who I played with on the Rams, but I just bumped into about a year ago. He's an IHOP guy, area developer in D.C. Another guy is, the group is a huge group I'm developing, but another guy who actually came to our summit last summer and opened up a franchise after the summit, or a second franchise after the summit, is Andrew Crowell. He's a Tampa Bay Buccaneer, retired this year. I'm not even sure if he's retired yet, but he's not playing this year. And he just opened up his second Jersey Mike's franchise. But I'm starting to meet a lot of guys that are, you know, at entry point in the franchise industry and are really, you know, looking to grow fast. I'm excited about it.
Well, it's neat that you mentioned Jersey Mike's, because I know Dave Melton, the Domino's franchisee and author of the book Hiring the American Dream, that was our guest last week on Franchise Today. When I asked him what his what other franchise organizations outside Domino's that he respected and admired, and one of the two that he mentioned was Jersey Mike's. So it's good to see that the athletes might be heading in that direction as well. You know, Are athletes always attractive prospective franchisees to the franchisors?
No. I would say, and I'm learning that as I go, I would say no. I would say that in some cases they are in franchise concepts that have seen the success, but for me they're not as attractive on one level, on the experience level and on the expectation level. So I think that, you know, looking at the fact that athletes can gain financing because they may have, you know, the war chest to get involved in franchising a little quicker in this kind of economy, that's always an attractive point. But at the same time, as the franchisor looks at the athlete, I think in many cases they see the star athlete. When you look at the athlete community, you see the biggest name from biggest names in the community, and those guys aren't always the in-store executors around their business all the time. Those guys are doing, you know, a lot of different things. But I would say, you know, what I found out and what we really want to project to the franchise community is that there's another group of athletes that are more so, I would say, the worker bees, people like myself, people who made, you know, a good amount of money in their careers, but are everything they did, they worked very hard for. They haven't necessarily reached a level to where everybody's doing everything for them. So they're worker bees, I say. So I think that, you know, for us, another one of our jobs is to educate the franchisor community that, hey, there's a different, you know, when you think athletes, don't think they're necessarily a higher tier of athletes. Think about the guys who can come in and make, you know, be on the ground working and making a success story of their opportunity in franchising. So it's our job to re-steer that that image, I think, that's out there.
Sure. I know I think it was yesterday's Wall Street Journal, they had a nice little article about offensive linemen on in one of the sections and how they're the unheralded group, and actually the linemen like not hearing their name during a TV broadcast, because if they hear their name, because they missed a block or an assignment or whatever. You know, obviously athletes historically gravitated toward, you know, quick-serve restaurants and casual dining. Are athletes looking at other channels in franchising?
Yes, we want to let everybody know that there is more than quick-service food franchise. And that's one thing that is really exciting to me. You know, you're looking at a new wave of sports and fitness brands. You're looking at a new wave of lifestyle brands and things that even offer more relativity to the athlete's past career. So, you know, and opportunities are abound. You know, even as far as, you know, there's different franchises that are good for different cultural mixes. So the opportunities are abound, and we want to, you know, kind of open up the entire franchise industry and show athletes that, hey, look, there's more than quick serve, and actually there's simpler things than quick serve in the franchise industry to get involved in.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize how complicated it is running a food service establishment. You know, and you mentioned some franchise industry segments like, you know, fitness and lifestyle type franchises. And I find it interesting that as you were saying that, I was thinking along the lines of, you know, one's own self-image. You know, what do you think the bigger problem is with athletes? You know, do you think it's managing their money, or is it really managing their image as well?
I would say probably more so managing their money. You know, like I played 8 years in the NFL. As far as image goes, you see the few athletes that are, you know, have the image issues. But like I said, those are the biggest guys in the group and the few in the group that you see. And I think it's always a projection of that's all athletes. So I think the managing the money is the bigger piece of the puzzle. When you're at a point to where you're managing your image, that means you're, you know, all over the international scene and you're a different type of guy. So I think it's more so managing your money and really being on top of what you're doing with your finances.
You know, that being said, do you see athletes, you know, creating franchise investment groups and bringing, you know, maybe operating talent to do larger development deals?
Oh, yes. I think all of that is to come along with this new wave that we're creating. I think a lot of that is to come.
You know, I go back and again, I'm looking at the NFL, but looking at the NBA too, and I just look at these, you know, this this wealth that's out there and these young players, and I think a lot of people, fans, you know, lose perspective that these athletes are people. They're very impressionable. And a lot of times those impressions are what, you know, sets the standard and establishes the foundation for their future. And it really has to be difficult at times. You know, and I know, I remember a good friend of mine in high school was a second-team high school All-American. And, you know, big superstar, big guy. Had a big following. Everybody looked up to him just because of the physical stature that he had, and he went on to Penn State, and he said, wow, there was a lot of other people that were as good, if not better, and it really knocked him down some. And I got to imagine that's got to be even greater as that funnel narrows through college ranks into the professional ranks. And then, of course, as you leave the career, how psychologically debilitating is that to some players?
Very. I think it's very. And I'm looking at it from a point of, you know, leaving the league. I think it's very debilitating to know that, you know, what you've been doing that has been garnishing all of this attention and all this praise and your, as your career making you a lot of revenue can no longer be done to make money again. You know, you think about that. That is, you know, like a surgeon getting their hands cut off. It's a debilitating thing. And I think that what is happening right now is a lot of athletes are going through their retirement and just disappearing because they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to talk to other athletes about it. And that just keeps the cycle going to where nobody's communicating, you know, down the ranks to younger athletes. Like, this cliff is coming. You're walking towards a cliff, and you'll be, you know, when you hit the cliff, you know, the same thing will happen to you, but nobody's talking backwards as far as to the younger athletes. So I think one thing, the way I visualize what we're doing is, you know, creating that resource so that a guy can, you know, be walking towards the end of his career, towards this state of, I will have to start all over from scratch to a state of, hey, this is a resource that I can grab a hold to right near the end of my career, develop myself in, and then move my confidence from sports into my confidence in franchising. And I think that's where it's at, helping keep the resources there so it's not a hopelessness when they're done playing.
Is that the reason why, especially I think from a basketball perspective, that you see a lot of athletes going on to Europe towards the end of their career, trying to hang on. Is it really trying to hang on, or do they just can't get themselves out of that spotlight?
I think, to be honest, it's trying to hang on. And I always parallel it because I think the best way to look at things is parallel them to the real world. It's almost like if you've been a top lawyer at a big firm. You know, for years and years and years, you know, you're going to, you know, and that firm says, hey, we're done with you. You're looking for other firms. They may not be as well off. They may not be the type of position you would took otherwise, but you're taking them because, you have a lifestyle that you built up and responsibilities. So, guys, and that's why I say it barrels down to financial. It's a financial thing. You know, guys are looking for what can I do to extend, you know, my time span of doing what I've been developing my whole life to develop, using my skills. So I think it all comes down to that.
So let's drill down a bit. You're talking to a group of players, and I assume at this case you don't recommend that they wait until they retire to start giving this some consideration. They really need to do it while they're actually playing, correct?
Yes, I think they need to either start doing it or start learning about it or start the process of educating and building relationships so that they already at least know what they're going to do.
Okay. Okay? So you're talking to a group of athletes. What's the first thing you recommend that they do?
Learn a business and meet some people that are successful in the business and shadow.
And how do you recommend that athletes make themselves more attractive to the business community? Because, you know, obviously there's a lot of perceptions that are out there. And how do they get past that? How do they make themselves more attractive?
One thing that we're working on is a certification, a franchisee certification type program for athletes that takes them through a level of education about the industry so that the second they're done with this certification, the PAFI certification, a franchisor knows, hey, okay, this guy's been through the PAFI certification education program. So he understands, the basic value proposition of the industry. And I think that's one thing that will help the franchisors, you know, kind of get a feel and understand where they're at. But end of the day, anytime a franchisor is interviewing a potential franchisee, you go through the same experience of, is this person going to manage my brand well? And that's the bridge we're trying to break down.
You know, there's a lockout looming on the horizon that's going to drastically affect some of the earning power of players, maybe just for a short time. You know, how should athletes prepare for something like that?
I think it's going to work itself out. Big business always works itself out. It's a huge, huge industry making a huge amount of money. So it's going to work itself out. I think the positive that will come out of it is guys will really start to understand that, you know, everything isn't as structured as it seems. You know, things aren't guaranteed. And I think guys will start to really reflect and say, what can I start looking at doing, you know, outside of sports to leverage myself. So I think it's going to be a good thing for the athletes in the long run because they'll educate themselves on what there is to do. I would say to prepare for it, batten down the hatches and be able to have yourself financially secure enough to be able to wait till it's all over with.
What do you say to the young athlete that says, I don't need to think about this right now, Michael. I know I'm going to be playing, you know, 5, 6, 7 years down the road. I signed a great contract. Things look bright. My stats have been good. I'll think about this 3 or 4 or 5 years down the road.
I think.
No, you get that a lot.
Yeah, I that was me. My first year to come into the league. But I think that the only way you break that, the only way you you start to get guys into the real realities of things is by showing them examples of themselves and letting them talk to people who have been through, been where they're at exactly and, show them where they're at now and build that kind of discussion. So one thing we try to do is build athlete-to-athlete discussion. I want to get, any athlete who wants to learn about the franchise industry, we're working with Junior Bridgman about creating an internship program at Bridge Foods. We're talking to George Tinsley, about creating a program at Tinsley Enterprises, because I think one thing we want to be able to do is show them this is what your life can look like after sports and then show them the alternative. This is what your life can look like. But once you can get a guy to sit down, and if it takes a Magic Johnson to sit down a young NBA player to realize that you need to start pinning yourself down and doing these things to be where I'm at, it takes that much. I think that's what we want to try to get done is show the athletes examples of success and examples of failure.
Yeah, and certainly a lot of them don't even take into consideration the possibility, if not the probability, of some type of injury.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You don't. And it's almost the nature of the athlete. It's almost what makes you able to compete is to be able to take all doubt out of your mind. When you come into a game with an inch of doubt in your mind, you're going to get killed that day. And that's the way you have to compete, is to not have any fear of failure and not to think about the failure. But at the same time, you almost have to be double-minded and be able to still plan outside of the game for the failures that may happen.
You know, it's a good point. When I remember watching Earl Campbell and thinking, you know, what a powerful individual. And those legs just kept churning away and churning away. And of course, his career was cut short by injuries. And it's a good thing that he planned for his financial future and has some enterprise, because I saw him not too long ago, and he can't walk, and it really took a toll on him.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I actually retired because of a hip injury with the Giants. So I didn't plan on retiring at 7 years, but I had a hip injury with the Giants and was forced to retire. So it always, nobody retires on their own terms in sports, I don't think, you know. And there's a few. You know, Brett may do it here. I mean, Brett Favre may do it here. but there's a few that retire on their own terms, but most don't, you know.
Yeah, Brett does not want to hang it up. I think he's made that decision, or at least the decision was made for him. The body's not acting like it did even just 2 years ago. You know, Joe Caruso, my co-producer, and I discussed that investment quality franchisors, you know, are always looking for the best talent and capital in their franchisees in order to build what we refer to as durable and sustainable franchise networks. And I know that's not so different than any NFL team or any sports team for that matter.
Exactly. It's all about talent. Bringing in the talent, bringing in the talent to raise the dollars or the dollars. You know, it's all about talent.
Yeah, and it is about talent. And you talk about talent, and you have to start out talking about skills. And what skills really can professional players bring to them that they've learned in the professional sports arena that they can bring with them to operating and growing a franchise?
That's a good one. I would say the discipline you learn in the game is that's one thing that I picked up from the game. The discipline, you have to do the exact same thing the exact same way, you know, every time. So the discipline you learn in the game is something, if you bring to franchising, I think it puts you in a position to be successful, because there's a repetitive nature to, you know, successful customer service, successful anything. So bringing that discipline to the game, always executing, always looking to execute, understanding that every customer is important, just like every play is important. And and I would say just having the worker mind state of, you go in, you put your hard hat on, you go into work, you give everything you have, only to go back out the next day and do the same. And it's a thankless situation, almost like the offensive lineman. It's a thankless situation a lot of times when you're working. But to be honest, as an NFL athlete, or NBA athlete, or MLB athlete, or NHL athlete, a lot of what got those people there is their work ethic, is the fact that 90% of what made Michael Jordan Michael Jordan is him going out alone, no crowds, no fans, shooting jump shots all night. Or what makes the big baseball player is him going to the batting cage alone and hitting 100 balls a day. I think that is what guys need to understand got them where they're at. It was not a quick hit, even on the world. It is a quick hit. He made a couple million dollars. It is actually 15 years of internship, you know, before you got to the league. And bringing that and understanding that, and that's what's going to get you to the next level. I think guys have to understand that and bring that to the next level.
And I think really a good point to bring is that, you know, oftentimes an athlete and even the absolute top 1% athletes fall into bad habits at times. And I'm talking more, you know, the physical bad habits, whether it be dropping your arm and you know, for a pitcher and they don't realize it, or, you know, baseball player dropping their hands as the ball's coming in, or a lineman twitching to the left when he knows he's going to the left, and obviously would be a big advantage for his defensive counterpart standing across the line. And they've come to listen to, you know, coaches pointing out, I know this might not feel right, but this is what you're doing wrong, and this is what you got to do to change. And I think that is a skill set that's going to be developed and maybe not a skill set, maybe just more a good bit of advice that they can bring to the table when they're looking at a franchise and following a system and being able to follow, okay, I'm off track, I need to get back. And I think that goes along the lines of what you're talking about, being able to go into the batting cage and spend hours hitting balls or go into an empty basketball court and shooting hoops and whatever the case might be. I think you're right. And I think something that, you know, the listening audience needs to understand, too, that in anything, whether it be sports and business, I mean, there is the possibility of hitting a bumpy road and experiencing failure. But, of course, as we know, it's the people that pick themselves up from failure, dust themselves off, and get right back at it again, right?
Exactly. How fast you bounce back. That's what it's about. Good point.
You know, as we're closing down, and I told you we would blow through this hour like no other, do you think it's a challenge for athletes to set aside their egos and embrace the role of becoming a franchisee and a small business owner?
I think yes. I think that is a challenge. I think when you see success, early success is always the best way to motivate you to continue pushing through a challenge. So I think when guys start to see the business model work, when the guys start to actually fit into a comfort zone and business model, is no problem because you're starting to see why this is important, why it's important to fit into the system, you know, to let go of some of your ego. If there is a way to allow your brand to be an advantage for you, use it. But if it's not, let it go. I think that, you know, guys having a full understanding of that that's the expectation, you know, makes the transition a lot easier. That's what we want to kind of put into guys, play the vision.
You know, one of the things that I think needs to be looked at in every athlete, as well as any other business person should look at, is what I refer to as the Houston Oilers Buffalo Bill syndrome. And have great success in the first half, only to be shocked at the final result. And, of course, I'm talking back to when the Oilers threw a 30-point-something lead that they had at the half.
Yeah,
not a lot of people that in sports that don't. But, you know, obviously the same thing holds true in business. Just because you have that early success does not mean you take your eye off the ball and lose sight of the overall objective, which, of course, is winning at the end of the game. That happens too often, and I think that's probably that carries through from the early success that athletes have when they've grown up through high school and they're all conference this and all district this on into college and so on, and that they got to realize that funnel just keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
Exactly. And understanding that just the early success, you know, can be a tool, be something that fuels you throughout your career. And understand that it's not the end, that's really the beginning point, you know, for your future success.
Absolutely. Well, Michael, it was really a pleasure speaking with you today. We are at the 2-minute warning, and I'm out of time now. And so I really thank you for being a guest on Franchise Today. And actually, in the future, I mean, you know, if you could recommend any athlete, you know, turned franchisee that is interested in coming on board, you know, with for a future segment of Franchise Today, you know, by all means, please reach out to Joe Caruso or myself. We'd love to extend an invitation for them to be our guest on the show, and it would be great to hear their experience and perspective. And certainly we need to stay in touch because I think this is an excellent initiative, and it definitely seems to be going in the right direction. Thank you again.
Thanks a lot. I'll definitely do so, and definitely don't forget to all the franchisor community, don't forget we'll have an athlete panel at the IFA convention on the New Market Summit, February 13th.
Well, that sounds good, and I'll be sure to come by and see you because I'll be there as well. And for more information about the Professional Athlete Franchise Initiative, please visit www.thepfi.org. And remember, next week, IFA President Stephen Caldera is scheduled to be my guest. Until then, I'm Paul Segretto, wishing you all the best in this great thing we call franchising. And Franchise Today is out.